plus de ta faute. Plus de ta faute. Plus de ta faute.
Welcome back to another episode of With Open Mouths, the podcast. I'm your host, Conita Lilla. Today, I'm excited to speak to Fatin Nestas Miswasi. Fatin is an artist, curator, scholar, and published author. She is currently a PhD student in screen cultures and curatorial studies at Queen's. Today, we talk to Fatin about growing up in Bethlehem in her father's studio. We talk about her journey as a site-specific artist, her publishing career and her teaching, but also her commitment to her community and to their art.
A new language distorted our face. What a shame. We were shining, they wanted us in shade. They thought we would stay slaves.
Hello, Fatin.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming to talk with us today about your artistic career and your curatorial practice. And I would like to start to ask you, what led you down this path? What kind of child were you?
Thank you very much for hosting me. It's really an honor to be with you and talking about my art and my culture, actually. So what led me to practicing art is maybe my family background, because I was raised in a family of famous stone sculptors. So I grew up basically in the studio of my father, which occupied half of my parents' house. So we were living in half of the house, and my father was taking the other half as his studio, working there. So I grew up between stone sculpturing and even the dust of the stone, which was very disturbing in one hand, but very nice and beautiful in the other hand. And I also grew up in Bethlehem. Bethlehem is a very, very ancient city. It's at least 2,000 years old. And we have very beautiful artworks everywhere, very traditional, archaeological, beautiful places. So I was attracted to art practices since a young age.
So you followed you were there in the studio when your father was practicing. Can you remember perhaps a time when you actually picked up something that had to do with stone sculpture?
Yeah, I am. I'm also a person, and maybe I was also a child who is excited about things, and I always like to experiment new things. And I remember from an early age, maybe 12, 13, for sure, when I was 14, I was already trying to work with him, to help him by grinding the stone, but then really by carving things. And I also, in an early age, I was interested in doing embroidery and crochet and handicrafts.
So you were interested in many things from the start.
Yes, because my mother used to do lots of embroidery. But then I also had an aunt who did crochet and knitting. So I remember I spent my childhood between my mom, my aunt, and then my father. Wow. I loved all these different artworks, you know.
So could you describe one of your artworks for listeners who haven't seen it before?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned now, I love and I enjoy doing different things. So in every artwork, I'm also using different kind of materials, sometimes techniques. But I think I will talk about a site-specific installation I've done in 2010 at the Växjö Cathedral in Sweden. It's called In Search of the Complete. And I really like it, and I'm proud of it. It was a solo exhibition. I was exhibiting a side of an international conference, or they invited me to do this exhibition. And it was site-specific because I've been in Sweden before, so I looked in the Växjö city, I walked around, and the Church of Sweden was very cooperative, so they allowed me to do the installation inside the meditation chapel of the Växjö Cathedral. And in that chapel is actually the oldest chapel that belongs to the Church of Sweden in Sweden. So it also has the element of the old history. And I found some fragments from the past in that chapel, literal fragments, actually some fresco pieces and some stone decoration works. And it echoed my own feeling because in 2010, I was already feeling very much like having scattered identity, I would say, or what I call fragmentations. So when I was traveling and I was thinking of what kind of art I want to do, I wanted to express the fragmentation I was feeling and experiencing within our own identity. And this is all, of course, related to me being a Palestinian, coming from Bethlehem, and the years prior to 2010 were difficult years in shaping our identities. And I'm talking especially about 2006, 2007. Many things on the ground were shifting. And even if I want to speak about a little bit the politics, we were in 2007, people elected Hamas to, you know, in our elections. But then the rest of the world did not accept and did not respect our democratic elections. So there were lots of demonstrations and there were lots of turning over against the Palestinian. And even in Palestine itself, the situation was not very clear. So I was feeling all of that fragmentation among the people, among ourselves. And that's why I called the piece In Search of the Complete. And when I went to Sweden, I also, my feeling became more like global because I felt not only the Palestinians are facing a struggle within their own identity, but even on an international level, you know, there are lots of crises happening in the world. So, and in that piece, I used basically terracotta that I rolled on an embroidered dress. So on the terracotta, I printed the negative pattern of the embroidery. And then when I fired the terracotta, it became like broken fragment pieces. Then I displayed them all on the ground in the church. And in the middle, there was a sentence taken from the Bible, which I also felt it suits very well because I was exhibiting in the meditation chapel in a church. And I chose the sentence from the Gospel of Matthew when Jesus was telling or inviting the people. He was saying, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." So I did that in Arabic calligraphy, and I displayed it in a circle shape because a circle feels like complete. Mm. So, and all around it were the fragments around.
Sounds beautiful.
Thank you.
So you went to art school in Jerusalem. What was that experience like?
Yeah, I went to study fine art in the Bezalel Art Academy. And, it is actually an Israeli art academy, and I was at a young age. I was still 18 years old. So first of all, I had to study Hebrew language. And then studying art was like exploring a new world. Although I grew up in an artistic background, as I mentioned, my father is a stone sculptor, but he does classical artworks, and also the Palestinian art is very symbolic art. So when I was at Bezalel, I was discovering the contemporary art scene and also the modern art world, which is very abstract, very conceptual, very different from what I grew up with. In addition to, you know, learning in a new language and being in a new culture, you know, because the culture in Bezalel was very much different from where I grew up in Bethlehem. Although the distance is not very much far away, it's just like 14 kilometers away from my parents' house. But it was a different culture. And also, it was lots of challenges. Lots of challenges. But I think I learned a lot, not only about art, but also about how to respect the others, even if we don't agree with them. You know, it was a good training for me, I would say.
There's you spoke briefly about your father, and I'd like to just return to that for a moment. The kind of sculpture that he did, and how he was like early on, before he started studying, he was working with Italians, and this kind of led him, you know, on a different journey. Could you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yes. Actually, my father also grew up in an artistic home like myself, because my grandfather was also a stone sculptor. And one of my biggest, one of my grandfather's biggest project was the restoration work at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. And my father was still a young teenager, 16, 17 years old. He was going to help his father actually sculpturing the capitals on the columns around the tomb of Jesus Christ. And he was very talented. So he met an Italian architect who was admiring the skills of my father, and he invited him to go to Milano and join the Brera Art Academy. And I think also my father is similar to my character, or or maybe I'm similar to his. So he just decided to go with the architect, and he started studying at Brera, and he actually got a PhD in art and stone sculpturing from there. So he remained 9 years in Italy.
And obviously spoke Italian?
Yes, he speaks very well Italian.
And he, so then he came back to Bethlehem and continued. So this is interesting because he continued to, in the classical way of.
Exactly. When my father was in Italy, it was during the 60s and the second half of the 60s. So it was when the Arte Povera and the minimal art school was flourishing in Italy and in Europe. But he was always fascinated by the classical art. He loves Michelangelo. Mm. So for him, although he learned the different styles, and I'm sure he tried them, but he was very attracted to do the classical stone sculpturing. So he came back to Palestine at the beginning of the 70s, 71, I think. And then he continued working with my grandfather. Before then, of course, establishing his own studio.
So coming from that very strong tradition, how did you yourself move into installation? And can you see a similarity? Because I can see that there is some kind of similarity between architecture and sculpture, these monumental sculptures that your father did, and the kinds of site-specific work that you do.
Yeah, actually, my father did lots of monuments in several cities, and sometimes he did even decorative artworks, and sometimes he did just art for, I would say, art for the sake of art. So he did, and I admire how my father was able really to support himself, and then to have a family and even support us from his art. So he was able to balance between art for art or art for even the Palestinian cause, because he sometimes did some art that was considered political, and sometimes he did commissioned artworks. And he worked also in big scale. So I think I am inspired by him, and because I like exploring things, I am always curious to combine things, like different materials and techniques. And I always, how I decide, for example, what to use is always referring to maybe the concept I want to communicate or the message I want to express. Because I also believe art comes from inside us. It's like something urging us to do something. But what we do is usually visual. Artists, including myself, I like doing visual things in order to communicate or express my thoughts and idea, because I always feel it much easier and better than if I want to speak. Mm-hmm. Even I write, but when I write, I hesitate a lot. Mm-hmm. It takes me a long time to write something and then even publish. I find it easier to express visually. I always, but as you said, I like to do things in not a big scale because of the scale itself, but I want maybe to have it impressive, or I want it to communicate well. So I want people to feel it or to be impressed or to notice it, you know.
Your use of materials that you just spoke about. I'm thinking about the piece of the chocolate coins, because I think that speaks very well to this the materials that are very important to your work. Could you talk about that?
Yes. This is called Memories of Gold. Actually, it was 2007. When I did it in Jerusalem, I was invited to join a Biennale that takes place in Jerusalem, organized by local organizers and institutions to just have art in the old city of Jerusalem. So when they invited me, this was actually also a very important artwork, because for me, this I consider this one to be the first site-specific installations. The artworks I've done before were installations, but mainly in galleries. This was literally in the streets and in the markets of the old city of Jerusalem. I was, of course, excited that they invited me to join that exhibition. And I wanted to do something in the streets because of my connections and my memories in Jerusalem. As I told you, I studied in Bezalel actually between 1993 to 98. And after that, I rarely received a permit to go and visit Jerusalem. As a Palestinian from Bethlehem, we need a special permit in order to go to Jerusalem. So I was happy, and I wanted to celebrate my memories in Jerusalem. And what I decided to do is to get a piece of a very transparent textile. It looks like a silk textile, but it's not original silk. But it's very transparent. And I was able to find a textile with a gold color. So just to, because it reminded me of the veils. So I wanted to surround some places or wrap some places with a veil. And I stitched chocolate coins on the veils for several reasons. Well, one of them is that also in the Arab tradition, the women put some coins on their veils. Especially during wedding times, it's part of the wedding traditions. But also I wanted to put the chocolate coins because chocolate will fade and will melt with the time. And the exhibition was quite, it was still quite hot in Palestine in October. It was around October time. So the idea was that I'll be wrapping those places and putting the veil around some places for a few days, then the chocolate will be melting with the time or maybe people will interact. And this is what happened, actually. People were interacting.
Of course they did.
And pulling chocolates out.
Yeah, so I think, I think what's interesting is that there is this balance of, and this play between nostalgia and memory, but also humor and joy, you know, that it's not just sadness, but it's also like in the moment, and that life is, you know, life is now and life is continuing.
Exactly. Yeah. And the piece interacts with the place and with the people around it. Mm.
So you say that a lot of your work is about fostering cultural appreciation and acceptance. Could you speak a bit about why this is so important to you?
Yeah, well, also how we ended talking about the work in Memories of Gold. I think what I try to achieve in my artworks is really communication and acceptance with the people, first of all, where I'm exhibiting, and with whoever is there to enjoy my work. And I always wish that people will enjoy the work and not just be provoked, you know, or feel that they are aggressive against. I like to share beauty with the people, and not just shocking them, you know, with images or with stories, because there are already so much sad stories and terrible images going around. In my artwork, I like to be more welcoming and more communicating. And I also appreciate beauty.
Mm.
So when I say I want to share cultural appreciation, I am very proud of my Palestinian background and my Palestinian culture. So I always try to highlight maybe some aspects, even like the work I spoke about in Sweden. I use the terracotta and the Palestinian embroidery with Arabic calligraphy. So those elements, even if someone could not read the sentence from the Bible, he will still see the beauty of the Arabic calligraphy, you know, or the embroidery imprinted in the terracotta, or the memories of gold. It looks beautiful, even if people don't really know what is the background of the artwork. But then it can also create some curiosity. So they will ask about it, they will approach, come closer, see what's there, what's happening.
And it's very, I think overall your work is very, it's very delicate. Yeah. It's very delicate. You have to pay attention or you will miss it. You know, I'm thinking about your piece, I think it's called God Have Mercy, with like... on the
barbed wire.
Yes, the barbed wire weaving in through like a fence. And the background being as important as the foreground, but then also the viewer's role as like, you know, interacting being like equally important.
Yes, I feel also more and more I am doing more and more delicate works, even like with anemones. But then maybe that's why the quantity is sometimes important, or what I call the dimension. So I'm trying to do more and more just for people to pay attention to. But again, I don't want to foster my artwork.
Mm-mm.
I don't want to foster it. I do it, I share it, and... I hope people will pay attention to it. Yeah, but God Have Mercy was maybe the most delicate artwork, I would say.
And it's also like you could walk past it and not notice
it. Not everybody noticed it. And in some places, people noticed it and they were trying to play with it. You know, that also fell apart.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but in some places, it is still standing there.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's beautiful. it's beautiful that it's got a life without you.
Yes.
You know, that it continues like that. So, sites of historic significance are important to your work. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yes. Also, being now, is I consider myself site-specific artist, I try to, at least if I don't have the choice to select the place itself, then I try to go and be there and just feel how I can use it or how I can speak through it or communicate through it. So sometimes if I can, like there's also another artwork I've done at Edinburgh. So I was also able to go before to travel to Edinburgh, and I walked through the city, and then I selected a specific place. So then I approached the people responsible for the place, and I was lucky, I would say, they accepted, you know. So I always, yes, try to be in the places. And when we say historic sites, I would say also that they mean something to me. So it's not only historic when it comes to the place itself only, but I also like to have a relationship with the place myself.
So in Edinburgh, was that where there were banners hanging yes. down the walls?
Yeah, yeah. It was at St. John Cathedral. And I also wanted it to be outside the cathedral, not inside, but it was called the Prince's Street, like here in Kingston. Mm-hmm. So I was able to hang the banners coming as if outside the windows, but they are not windows, they are fake windows. So I covered the fake windows with scrolls mm-hmm. as if they are coming oh, out from down. The window. Oh. Exactly.
You do a lot of work in churches.
Yeah.
Do you think this is because of your family background, or what is your relationship to? Besides being very beautiful, they're all very beautiful, like historic sites.
Yes, I think I consider art a very spiritual practice as well. I like praying or meditating in a church. So I also consider art or practicing art as a meditation. And I feel they just fit well together, I would say. They really fit beautiful together.
And I think that is the, but that's where your work kind of transcends that kind of classical sensibility of your father and your grandfather, yeah. like to actually bring contemporary, like site-specific work in, and it makes it very it makes people very aware, that it exists like that. So besides being an artist and a curator, you are also a scholar of Palestinian art, and you've published 3 works. Can you talk to me about why it is important to publish about Palestinian art?
Yeah, well, when I started studying art, and it was in Bezalel again, I could not find enough books or articles about Palestinian art. And I'm talking again about the 90s. And I was hearing all different kind of stories about, for example, that there were no art in Palestine prior to 48, which, of course, shocked me because I come from an art house with, and I knew many artists who were doing art even before 48. Not so many, but I mean, in the 90s when I was studying art, of course, I knew some friends of my father as well. So I wanted to know what was happening before 48, you know, why is that claim? And what kind of art and why it's not considered art, you know, all of those questions. And then I also believe that we need to publish, because it's not only me. We need to share the information with as many people as possible. So I started searching from an early age, and I searched not in archives, by the way, although I love archives, but my best way is meeting people and talking with people. It seems this I'm good in contacting people and making good friendships. So I also met some of the Palestinian scholars like Kamal Boulata, who wrote a book about Palestinian art, was published in 2001. And even Israeli scholars like Ganit Ankuri and others. So I was good in meeting people. I was trying to learn as much as possible from them. But still, I also met Sliman Mansour, who is considered one of the most famous Palestinian artists. And I was also maybe lucky that I got the fund to publish the first book. The first book was about Sliman Mansour. It was published even in Arabic, English, and German because the fund was from Germany, you know. So I would say it's good that I was able to get that fund. It encouraged me. And of course, I had a good friendship with Sliman Mansour, who is in the age of my father, by the way.
But that's interesting.
Yes.
Wow. So it's like he went one way, your father went another way.
He's a painter, but I like his artworks and the way he always has new styles or new ideas, new experiments.
So that, it didn't stop there for you. Your publishing didn't stop there. You wanted to have an art school in Palestine, a contemporary arts, a school of art. Yes. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yes, because also I wanted to share what I was learning and discovering, you know, with my community. And I love my community very much, of course. So even while studying still in Bezalel in the BFA program, I remember the summer after completing the third year, in the summer, I proposed to do a summer course for teenagers in Bethlehem. And I offered the proposal to the International Center of Bethlehem, who was like a community center. We call it an NGO, non-governmental organization. So I did the course. It was very successful. And that's how I also made good friendship with the director of the center. And when I graduated, he offered me to work as the art coordinator at the center.
So before this, there was nothing happening in Palestine like this?
Not in the contemporary field. Mm. Not in the contemporary field, because like my father, all his friends were doing kind of classical art. And we call it the art of resistance in Palestine. So the art of resistance is very much like the social movement art, you know, which is a very symbolic art, but not with the contemporary art.
So it's kind of similar like Diego Rivera's yes. murals
exactly.
and frescoes, things
exactly.
like that.
So it's the art for sake of resisting occupation, for sake of fostering and strengthening the Palestinian identity. That's why it's full of symbol. It's very beautiful and colorful as well, but it's different than what we say, the contemporary. And it has to carry a message, you know. It
yes.
always has to carry a message. And most of the time, it was only paintings. Actually, even my father was finding sometimes difficulty in exhibiting stone sculptures because there were no galleries in 70s and in the 80s until 93. Galleries were banned by the Israeli government because of the art of resistance. So the Israeli knew the effect and of the art in this society. So they were arresting artists, confiscating artworks, you know, and they were not allowing art education in universities, and they were not allowing art galleries. So only after Oslo Agreement, which took place in September 1993, the Palestinians were able to have a Ministry of Culture, and we are now having also a Ministry of Higher Education. So we are able to have our own programs, I would say, accredited by the Ministry of Higher Education in Palestine. So before that, there were only one traditional art education at Al-Najah University, which is in Nablus, north of the West Bank. And this was very traditional, just like the ceramic and interior design and painting, but very decorative art. They were not allowing even the, you know, art of resistance. Of course, they don't want it.
But like just even classical Western classicism or any of that?
Yeah, but even if our Palestinian artist like Sliman Mansour, he painted some classical realistic artworks, but they were still holding symbols in them.
Yes, of course.
You know, why? And Sliman also was many times arrested. You know, it was normal for artists to be arrested and then released. And that's why they also, according to Sliman, he told me sometimes in the 70s, 80s, they were only producing small size canvases, paintings that would fit in a car. Because they also wanted to show their art, but they would be showing them in schools, the entrance of a hospital or the entrance of a municipality. So, and only for 2 hours, for example, and then they will pack their artworks and leave quickly.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So when you were starting to establish this?
I started working in 1998, which was now after Oslo Agreement, and we were able to start having our own, expressing our own self with whatever tool we wanted to express or with whatever style we wanted to express ourselves with. It was kind of okay, accepted. So I started working at the International Center of Bethlehem. We started offering more and more contemporary art courses. And we also established the first gallery for contemporary art in Bethlehem. So we hosted very famous Palestinian artists who are now really leading artists like Steve Sabella, Larissa Sansour, Samia Halabi, and as well as international artists who were, of course, interested to come in Bethlehem. So, and whoever would come to exhibit were also offering workshops or gallery talks. So this is how things started, and then we realized that it's very important and the people in Palestine were more and more interested. So we developed Dar el-Kalima University, but it all came step by step. So we started as Dar el-Kalima College in 2016. We got the official accreditation, and we were offering 2-year diploma programs in documentary filmmaking, jewelry art, and also contemporary art. And then we kept growing. Then we received accreditation as a university college. And in 2016, we became a university. So now we offer bachelor degrees in contemporary art, also in filmmaking, and in various other. We have now a department of design, where they offer also architecture, interior design, graphic design, and we have also the fine art department or college. Now it's college.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. And it's now grown. How many students are there?
Today we have almost 400 students.
400 students, and you are now offering an MA.
Yes, we offer an MA. So we also have the College of Higher Education.
That's incredible. That's very inspiring. To just hear how you were involved, you know, like from the ground up like that.
Yeah, and it's interesting always that the community interaction, you know, it was very good. And it showed us that we need to do more and more because it's very important for the community. And we saw students were really being able to express themselves. Some of our film from the film program, I'll speak more about it because I was the dean of the College of Art. So some of the graduates from the film program even reached the Cannes Film Festival One of them won a prize like 6 years ago, I think. And this year they were nominated, but we didn't win.
But that's amazing.
It's amazing, that's, of course. Yeah. It's, wow, of course, the category of the students.
In such a short time.
Yes.
You know? So I think it's like, it's a testament to how much the community wants it and needs it.
Yes, yes. And we have creative students, you know. We have, yes, creative students who are able to do art, to do films, you know, different kind of artworks. And it's good quality art, you know. It's, so it reaches and it competes on international, mm-hmm, level.
Yeah. So I think that leads into like the role of the community, you know, in your work. How did the community, I mean, it seems like it's an obvious thing, but it's only very specific people that make the community a central part of their work. How did the community become important to you?
Well, maybe it's my nature again. I feel I'm a very social person and I love people. So I like being with people. Even when I was thinking of myself earlier, like, well, do I want to do site-specific or only studio artworks? But I was tending more to do site-specific artworks and community artworks. I don't see myself as a studio artist, you know? Maybe also sometimes that's why my artwork keeps changing, because it's not only one medium in the studio that I'm specialized in. See it as a practice more than just being specialized in field. So wherever I go and wherever the community around me, I like to always include people as much as possible. Although I don't do a lot of joint artworks, if I now think about it. Most of my artwork is independent at the end.
But it's a lot of interaction and,
yes,
engagement.
A lot of engagement and, as you said, interaction and communication. Again, I like to get feedback from the people. And even when it's an installation, I enjoy seeing the people going inside the artwork or around it. I've done also some video artworks or video installation artworks. So in the video, it also gives the dimension sound and images. So I always like to see the people walking in the artwork, you know, not just standing and looking,
yes,
at it.
So they're integral to that, yes, to your practice.
Yeah.
So Fatin, you are now in Kingston. Yeah. How has moving to Kingston impacted your artistic practice?
Yeah, well, I came here to do the PhD program at the Screen Cultures and Curatorial Studies program at the Film and Media Department at Queen's. So I, of course, could not bring my studio with me, although I have a studio at home.
At home.
But at least I brought my skills with me. So when I felt the need to do art, I just chose to go back to the crochet technique. I think it also because of the meditation aspect of it. When I'm doing the crochet, it's very peaceful, it's very quiet, it's very soft. Also that the feeling of the wool.
So
you
it's
know,
this?
Yes, these artworks. So in the first few months, of course, I was very busy in settling in and was very excited about studying, starting my education and reading more, less doing things by hand. But I missed it, of course. And then I felt that I need just to do things with hand. So I picked up doing crochet and I did the anemones. Now, this is a very symbolic artwork, and we spoke about the Palestinian art being very symbolic. So maybe being away from Palestine, I feel I need to be back connected to the land. So anemones have the story that they grow very wild in the fields in Palestine, just at the beginning of the spring for like couple of weeks, maximum 3 weeks, and then they disappear. So we have this story, or it's kind of mythology, that they grow in the places where people died, and we call them martyrs. So that's why they also take the color of the blood from the martyrs, and they are very fragile. The precarity of this flower is like our lives in a way. And it all, of course, connects with to what we are living today back in Palestine. We have a terrible genocide with, unfortunately, thousands of martyrs are killed. So I felt I need to commemorate them. But again, in a beautiful way. I am not good in, although I go to demonstrations, but I'm not good in doing provocative artworks. Or so they are very beautiful and soft and delicate. I even don't mind if people don't connect it to the story, because for me it's important that I am doing it. It's good for me, as again, calm me down. I feel better when I'm doing them. And I was also able to exhibit them at the Art and Media Lab at Isabel and Bader Center, yeah, and also at Agnes. So it was very good for me to share them with the local community again, because I like to share the stories.
Yeah. And any plans for your future work?
Yeah, I will continue working. Now, yesterday I met people at the Tet Gallery who are doing knitting and crochet, and I started knitting the watermelon. It was funny. One of them thought it's a summer pattern, watermelon.
Yes.
It's a summer pattern. But it's also very symbolic, because the watermelon is having the same colors like the Palestinian flag. So it's a pattern of, or it's a symbol of resistance in Palestine. So now that's why we have lots of watermelon in our artworks. So my plans is to continue maybe crochet a little bit more. I also have done the artwork at the Agnes in cooperation with Alejandro, with the History of Art Department.
It was Tracing Kings in Solidarity.
Yes,
like an archival project.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and that I also produced. I consider it a very important artwork, by the way, because in that artwork I was thinking with myself about the concept of home, and home and identity, and how are they related or maybe not related together? Or what does home mean? Is it not, of course, it's not just a physical place, but what kind of place should it be? You know? So, yeah, wherever there is an opportunity for me to practice art and with the community, I will be joining. In addition to that, I'm also going to focus on my PhD research
that
creation project.
That would probably be a good idea.
Yeah. And I feel I've been busy enough this summer, so I'm looking forward in September to go back to the research creation project.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you very, very much for speaking with us. It's been so like illuminating. You know, I had no idea that there was such a rich legacy, like a deep and rich legacy.
Thank you very much for hosting.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to With Open Mouths. Special thanks to Fatin Matwasi for speaking with us today. I'm your host, Connita Lilla. This podcast is produced by Danuta Seerhaus and Agnes Etherington Art Center in partnership with Queen's University's campus radio station, CFRC 101.9 FM. Episodes are edited and mixed by Chancellor Maracle. The music is composed by Jamil 3DN and produced by Elroy EC3 Cox III. Episodes of With Open Mouths are released monthly, and you can find them on Digital Agnes, CFRC's website, and on your favorite podcasting platform. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a review and subscribe now so that you don't miss a single episode. We'll see you next time. This is what they envy, and the culture.